Welcome back to the Bob Pritchard Straight Talking Radio Show. Where over the past 8 years, we've given you an insight into the lives of around about 400 or 420 of the world's most successful and interesting business people. We've talked about the services they provide, the challenges they may have faced, how they might have overcome those challenges, what it is that makes them successful. And underneath it all, I guess we try to find out what it is that makes them tick personally. Now, there are several ingredients to a successful business. A good product is one. A great business model and strategy is another. An excellent team. And, of course, funding. And they're the ones that first come to mind. But another important element that doesn't immediately come to mind to many people is marketplace visibility. Now, Jerry Nylands is the founder and president of Trade Press Services, which is a marketing communications and media relations firm. I guess you'd call them a PR firm, but we'll find out in a minute. When I was thinking about that, I thought, I wonder if PR and marketing communications and media relations are the same, and I wasn't quite sure. Now, with more than 40 years' experience as a sales and marketing professional, an entrepreneur, a consultant, an author, an educator, Jerry's mission is to help companies and individuals accelerate business growth by increasing their visibility in the marketplace, i.e. the more people who know about you, the more people who've got a good feeling about you, the more people that respect who you are and what you are, the faster you'll grow, you'll develop a competitive edge, you'll communicate more effectively with customers and prospects, and you'll gain recognition as experts in your field. And that's really important. If you're seen as an expert, then it does wonders to attracting business. Now, Jerry's worked with more than 500 clients from startups to Fortune 500s, and since 1995, she set the vision for Trade Press Services and uses her wealth of experience, and she's done a whole shed load of things to develop innovative and impactful marketing solutions for clients. She's a frequent blogger and has had more than 80 articles published in magazines and other outlets such as CEO Magazine, Publishing Executive, Richtopia, and Leadership Excellence. Jerry's been recognized as a top marketing communication professional by ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. And that's just about the gamut. Now, this girl really knows her stuff, delivering proactive and practical marketing plans that have increased sales and profits for clients. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. It's great to speak with you.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me.
That's fantastic to have you on the program. You've been heard right around the world. Now, you've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I hate it when people say that to me. You've been in this business for such a long time. Well, screw you. I'm really only 35. You've been an entrepreneur for a long time. So what made you decide to become a specialist in marketing communications?
Well, I decided at a very early age that I wasn't going to be happy in a traditional bureaucratic environment where standard operating procedures were the foundation of the business. Yeah. I needed more. I'm a big picture person. I still have the ability to be detail oriented too, but I'm more visionary, and I wanted control over my life and my success, and I knew I wasn't going to get it loading IBM data processing machines with tape for their telephone billing processes.
Yeah.
Just didn't do it for me.
Yep, I understand that. So, is there a difference between a PR company and marketing communications and media relations?
I think that there is. We do perform some traditional PR functions. We combine PR or media outreach with marketing and our writing services. So we really cover the gamut.
Okay, so what are the most common services that clients, if first of all, what sort of clients are your usual clients? I mean, are they big companies, small companies? Are they service companies? Are they, what sort of companies are they?
You know, through the years, it's changed, but they're generally smaller to medium-sized companies that don't have full-time marketing staff on board.
Right.
So they can't be, you know, a solo practitioner consulting firm that doesn't have a budget for marketing, although we have worked with those too. But companies probably in the range of 10 to 100 employees and maybe 5 to 30 million in annual revenue.
Right.
So they're really tend to be smaller because those are the types of companies that really could use our services and we can really help them.
Right. So what sort of marketing services do you provide?
There are three services that we offer. One is writing. So we develop content for Byline articles, white papers, case studies, books, blogs, press releases, newsletters, website copy, any type of written word that keeps a company connected to its target audience. The second service we offer, which is a little more traditional PR, we call media outreach. And in this area, we generate editorial coverage for clients and speaking engagements. We conduct social media coordination. In 24 years in business, we've written for more than 800 publications.
Right.
And they range. You asked earlier about our target industries and the clients we've served. They're all B2B, but they range from technology to food manufacturing to consultants, engineers, architects, in the education field. It's really the gamut. So anybody that has products or services that can be sold B2B, that's where our sweet spot is.
So what's the difference?
Well, and the third service is general marketing support, and that is really what separates us from most PR firms and ad agencies and creative services companies. General marketing support means that we can help any company write a marketing plan, review a marketing plan, evaluate a marketing plan, or implement a marketing plan. Or we can step in and do project work like market research, trade show research, prospect list development, competition review, any type of project that has a start and a stop date. And we do that for companies whose internal resources are on overload with
right.
the competing priorities and the fast pace of business change. There are lots of companies where marketing initiatives are falling through the cracks. We help out.
What is it easier or harder as a marketing communicator, B2B or B2C?
Our focus has always been B2B because it's a more defined marketplace. I think that B2C requires a much larger budget. It requires a heavy investment. You don't have the types of controls when you're trying to attract consumers as when you're trying to get business from people who have a specific business challenge or a need. So I really focus on the B2B area.
So
B2C is fickle.
Yeah.
They go after the next greatest fad. So you never know what they're going to respond to.
Yeah, and your competition changes much more quickly too, I guess. So is it important for all businesses to engage a marketing communications firm or certain types of businesses? Or if you're in business and you're B2B, you should have a firm representing you?
Well, I don't know that you need a firm to represent you, but one of the biggest mistakes we see in companies is they operate without a marketing plan. And I think without a marketing plan, you don't have a cohesive team. You don't know when you're successful and when you're not. People don't know where you're trying to go, and they can't help you to get there without a plan. And
yes,
things tend to fall through the cracks. You go over budget, and there's all kinds of disasters. So we think that every company needs a marketing plan in order to function. It doesn't have to be too long. It has to be practical. It has to be funded. You have to have an assignment of responsibilities. You have to have some way of monitoring it so you can determine, you know, when you're being successful, when you're not, and what adjustments have to be made.
Sure. I always say to people that so many people go into business without a business plan or a marketing plan. And I say, you know, would you build a house without a really good set of plans? No, of course I wouldn't. Well, you know, if you did, what would happen? Well, your house would probably fall down. Well, business is the same. If you don't have a good plan and a good strategy to implement that plan, your business is going to fall down. It's really that simple.
I think that's so true. And for companies that don't have a plan, we try and move them one step forward by asking them to think about their target markets in terms of three aspects. One is frequency of contact. So how many times per year do you want to communicate with your prospects and customers?
Right.
And then secondly, what are the messages that you need to develop? You know, what problems do you solve for your customers, and what are their pain points? What's of interest to them? And then the third aspect of the strategy is the marketing channels. So what methods are you going to use to communicate? And if you develop a matrix like this, even without a marketing plan, at least it's the first step, because if you say you want to communicate 12 times a year, once a month, which isn't a lot, and you see that it's now April and you put out one press release, well, one press release is not a campaign.
Right.
So, you know, that frequency is really a key point in coming up with a strategy. And then the messaging, you know, finding out exactly what the marketplace needs and delivering on those needs. So are you really using the right marketing messages as you approach prospects and customers? So are they relevant? Are they timely? Are they innovative? Are they compelling? And then the third, as I said, you know, do you want to use, you know, publication and articles in magazines, advertising, trade shows, social media, email campaigns.
Yeah.
So all of these things are important in terms of developing a marketing strategy.
It's also often that a company may have half a dozen clients, and the message that needs to go to each of them may be quite different.
Yes, that's true.
So you've got to think through the relationship, or how to develop the relationship with different clients with different needs, and you need to contact them in different ways and different frequencies, and so there's a lot to that.
That's true. Do you remember Harvey McKay's book, How to Swim with the Sharks and Eating the Lever, something like that?
Yeah, I do. A long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. But in that book, he talked about what every salesperson needed to know about their customers. And he had this long, long list of items that range from, you know, how people want to be communicated with, to birthdays, to family information, it was just a lot of detail. But it really built the foundation for developing a relationship, because it showed your interest in other people.
Yeah, that's something that's really seems to have gone by the wayside. I know that 20 years ago, or maybe more, we used to always know a client's birthday. We used to know their anniversary dates or what anything that was important, their kids' names, and if it was their kid's birthday, the kid was sick, you'd send them a little toy and a card, and we used to do that for every client. I have not done that. This is a terrible thing to say, but I have not done that for a client for a long time, and I guess that's just the pace of where business is today, or maybe we're much more cynical and you get a gift like that these days, you're saying, you know, they're sucking up to me or something.
Well, you know, I still do some of that. You know, I'm not as good as I used to be. But when I was really young, I was fortunate enough to have a mentor who taught me about how to work with clients. In fact, he had 59 client guidelines that he shared with me when I came into his marketing consulting practice. That was before the internet. But he talked about the importance of listening and the importance of practicing respect, consideration, and having integrity, and being proactive. And I think his favorite was follow up and follow through. When somebody asks you to do something, you tell them when you're going to finish it by. It doesn't mean you have to do it that moment. You say, you know, great idea, I'll be happy to do that for you, I'll have it finished by next Tuesday, whatever it is.
Right.
And then you deliver on time so that, you know, it's communicate.
That shows respect too, doesn't it?
It does. And I think that a 24-hour rule he used to have, when somebody calls you, you return calls within 24 hours, period.
Yeah. I was just thinking that you know, introducing an old style. I remember I've done a couple of thousand speeches, and when I'd get a speech, I would always send a basket, you know, a food basket or something to the booker. Now, I've sort of got out of the habit of doing that. I was just sitting here thinking, you sort of twigged my memory. And we used to do that religiously, and all of a sudden
Absolutely.
I got out of the habit of doing it for some reason. I think probably the world's moving too fast and you don't have the time to sit back and focus maybe like you used to. I'm not sure.
Well, I think there's some of that, but in certain industries, that's seen as a bribe.
Yeah.
And not, you know, appreciation or recognition. You know, and that's a whole other topic about what makes entrepreneurs successful in terms of their leadership and their collaboration and their transparency and wanting to work with others. You want to give them the recognition and attention and appreciation they deserve. Sometimes that's more important than a raise or whatever compensation package you offer. It's just having that open door policy and acknowledging people.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So you've got over 40 years experience, and you're a bit like me. People hire us, usually because of my credentials. So I'm hands-on with every project we take on, and I only ever take on three projects at a time. Now, I've had a lot of people say to me over the years that the problem with PR companies and a lot of consultants is that unless you're a big-paying client, so this also applies to advertising agencies, probably worse, you get some junior in the back office working on your project. With your firm, how hands-on are you? And if I'm a, you know, relatively small fish client?
It doesn't matter about the size of the client. I'm hands-on with every client we work with. So
good.
I don't have a client services director. I am the client services director.
That's good.
So I know about every project. I'm I monitor the status of every project. If something isn't going according to Hoyle, I know about it, I address it, I deal with it. And even if a client wants something that we don't provide, you know, my goal is to say yes.
Right.
And if they ask for something and I can point them in the right direction or give them a referral or even go outside of our, you know, standard services just to solve the problem they have, I do that. I had a client last week who called me on a Friday, and they had a white paper that they had written internally, and they said it had to be finished on Monday and asked me to edit it. I don't know a lot of CEOs that would work on Saturday and Sunday to do that for a client, but
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, good. So if I hire your firm, what are the criteria by which you judge whether or not the campaign's successful?
Well, that's an interesting question because through the years, you know, we've struggled with answering that question in terms of revenue generated or number of leads that have come in as a result of our campaigns. We've decided that, you know, that's just not feasible. We don't have those kinds of controls.
Yeah.
But for me, what's defined success is if a client says to me, I want 3 articles published this year.
Right.
And we've accomplished that goal, then I say we have a 100% success rate. So we have a business model with 2 guarantees. And one of them is if we are not successful in getting you published in the magazines you target, we'll refund your investment.
Right.
In 24 years in business, we've never had to refund any money. We have a 100% success rate. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, so you should be.
Thank you. The other aspect of our business model, and I have never seen this put in writing before, is we say to clients, if you do 1 project a year with us, we will never raise our fees to you as long as I own the company. Can you imagine working with a company that says they will not raise their fees? I mean, you look at Verizon and AT&T and you know, all these companies where you may have been a valued customer or maybe not a valued customer for years and years and years, and they keep raising your rates without giving you any more services. I don't believe in that business model. So I think that the idea of having a client who can do their marketing plan and marketing budgeting every year, knowing they're never going to get a dreaded call announcing a fee increase from our company, is a tremendous benefit.
How long can you keep doing that for? Because I would imagine that if I got a quote in 1995 and I got a quote today, they would be quite different.
Well, yes, and certainly they would, but I think we're able to do that because of the type of business that we have. You know, we're not hiring outside agencies.
Sure.
We're not buying products or services where we pass on some expense to clients. You know, they're paying for what's between our ears, you know, our brains, our thought process, our capabilities, and our proven track record. So there are customers who we've been working with for 10 years that haven't had a fee increase.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. What if a client comes in and says, I want to achieve ABC, and you create something that you believe will achieve that, and they say, I don't like it. I want to do something different. How do you handle that? Who's right? You or the customer?
I don't think it's a matter of being right. I think it's a matter of continuing education and communication and coming to a point where everybody is happy with the go-forward decisions.
Mm.
You know, is it possible 100% of the time? Probably not. you know, if a client came to me and said, I want to be published in the Wall Street Journal or Fortune or Forbes or one of the national business press outlets that don't use contributed articles, I would tell them, you know, that's not something that we can arrange.
Yeah.
So if they have an unrealistic expectation, then, you know, it's my job to let them know.
Bring them
and
down
to clarify it.
Yeah. Throughout my career, I have met an awful lot of what I regard as pretty stupid clients. So you're obviously nicer than me.
Well, you know, I've learned to smile a lot.
Yeah,
and to laugh, and that's okay.
What about when you know you're right, and the customer complains? The customer's expectations are ridiculous. Does that happen to you? It certainly happens to me.
I haven't had a lot of that, and I think part of it is because we do a good job up front explaining what we do, how we do it, and the benefits the client will receive. And then we can say to the client, you know, here's what we said we're going to do, and here's what we did. And, you know, if that's not something that is meaningful or important to you, you know, I certainly apologize, and I would want to do whatever we can to fix it. I'll go the extra step of the mile, even if it costs me some money. Because our goal is to be of service.
You've got a great attitude.
Thank you.
So, how has the PR business PR? There I go. How has the marketing, communication, and media business changed over the past 10 years?
I think it's a great question. I think. The way people communicate, the number of channels available to them, 24/7, you know, people working in different parts of the country, different parts of the world. So the idea of collaborating across time zones, that's been a change, you know. Workforce flexibility, the number of mergers and acquisitions, the advances in technology, you know, those are all ways that businesses have changed. I also think the length of the decision-making process has increased. I don't think that's good in business, but I think it's a fact of life.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I would have thought that most companies have learnt to be more flexible and more reactive to client needs than they ever were before.
I think that's true, but getting them to make a decision to begin with.
Yeah.
I don't know if the people in managerial roles are not risk takers, or if they're afraid of making a mistake. I have a client who says to me, there's no such thing as failure. One door closes, another door opens. So if companies and leaders were a little bit more tolerant in terms of encouraging their people to, quote, fail or to make mistakes and learn from them.
Absolutely.
I think that would be a good way to help individuals evolve and develop.
I couldn't agree more. And today there's a hell of a lot of emphasis placed on social media and influencers, particularly on the B2C market. But how much influence do social media and influencers have on the B2B market?
Well, I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I don't really like social media. I am not a big fan. I understand it's necessary, especially in the B2C world. I'm not convinced that it has all of the merit that some people attribute to it in the B2B world. I think there are a lot of companies spending a lot of their resources, time, money, and personnel in that, I'm not sure that the payoff is there. And maybe it's something you have to do just to be visible in the marketplace, but in terms of actual results, I'm not convinced that it's the be-all and the end-all of business marketing.
What are some of the mistakes? What are the major mistakes that companies make?
Well, I think we talked about one is that, you know, they operate without a marketing plan.
I think that's a big one.
Yeah. Secondly, I think, you know, they work in silos. You know, it goes back to something you said earlier about the way the Australians function. You know, there are secrets and you're not willing to share information. And there's no transparency. So I think that that's one of the mistakes that companies make. I also think that sometimes companies are not as proactive as they could be in anticipating marketplace changes and marketplace needs. So I think that's another area where they make mistakes.
So I'm a young person and I'm starting up my own business and I'm selling B2B. What are the most important advice you can give me?
Well, number one, do your research. Make sure that you can identify a marketplace need. You know, you don't want to go off on a tangent or an idea that doesn't have practical application. Run the numbers. You know, say, you know, the what ifs. You know, if I develop this product, it's going to cost me this much. How much do I need to sell to recoup my investment? What will the profit margin be? So I'd say, you know, do your research, run the numbers. Secondly, find a mentor or a coach.
Absolutely.
You know, especially if you're young and you don't have a lot of business experience. And with a mentor or a coach, I'm sure they will help you find the right types of training and education and information that you need to develop and acquire in order to be successful. Continuing education. I had a sales training client that once said the sign of a true professional is that they never stop learning.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
I do too.
And network. And of course, you know, we talked about having a plan. So I think that that's important too.
Okay. Jerry, we're out of time, but thank you very much for speaking with me on the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Now, you can reach Jerry and her team at tradepressservices.com. That's trade. TRADE, press, PRESS, or SS, services, SERVICES.com. And I'll be back with more of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show on Voice America Business after this short break.